I don't think digital technology should try and supplant books. I don't think we should imagine that even that we should replicate them. I think we need to work out what is it that digital can do that is different from print and become specialists in that and not try and compete with what is already a pretty perfect communications medium.
More of what you find in public libraries is digital, from ebooks and article databases to systems for checking out materials. Sure, it's convenient and can increase library access to people who can't get to a physical branch. But it's also a potential privacy nightmare, since lots of things can be tracked. That's a big concern to many people, especially Tony Agee, since he's the chief digital officer of the New York Public Library, arguably the world's largest public library. Welcome to GeekWire from GeekWire.com in Seattle. I'm Frank Catalano, GeekWire contributor. I talked with Agee for a Seattle Public Library event on innovation, privacy, and the public good in the digital age, and a library's role in all of it. Agee is overseeing the New York Public Library's digital transformation after spending a number of years with the BBC. Here are some excerpts of our live conversation in the fall of 2018. We started by talking about his job.
So, Tony, let's get some of the basics out of the way. You are the chief digital officer at New York Public Library, and you've been there about 3 years now?
Two and a half years.
Two and a half years. What does a chief digital officer do?
Well, I would say that I do two things. One is I'm responsible for the digital transformation of the entire library. So I'm responsible in the same way the chief finance officer is for every dollar that is spent throughout the entire library. And she also has a small team that she manages who help her do that. I'm responsible for the entire digital footprint, all the digital activity in the entire library. I also run a very small team in the center who help me manage that.
What do you find to be the biggest misconception by the public about the role of digital in a library's mission?
Books. I think most people imagine that libraries, I mean, you know, like a lot of things, you say the first thing you think. So I think most people think libraries are books, and therefore they think digital is digital books.
So you think the limitation is that people then think that the only thing digital is in a library is the essentially taking a book and putting it into some digital form?
Yeah, I think the first question anybody asks me is, you know, how long is it going to take you to digitize all the books? You know, once we get talking, I sort of say, you know, that if you look at, I don't know, American Airlines, they have made a complete transformation, digital transformation. Everything you would do with American Airlines now, you would do digitally. You can book your ticket, you can check in, you can get through the gates, you can literally get from the moment you want to start flying to the moment you arrive. Using some kind of digital interface. The only thing you can't do, or the only thing you definitely use, is a physical aeroplane. You use a real plane, and they'll probably really lose your real luggage. But those two things are still physical. Everything else is digital. And the role of the library would be the same. Literally everything that you do in some way or other touches some digital activity, whether that's the catalogue or booking a hold or paying your fine, booking a room, using Wi-Fi. So, you know, there are digital activities all the way through every aspect of a modern library. Only one of the things we do is deliver the books themselves digitally.
What do you think, you know, you talked about what the biggest misconception is. What do you think the proper role is, though, of digital in a library?
What's the proper role?
Yes.
I think probably relevance in the era that we're in. I think there is an expectation among the public that we will use the most modern means available to us and probably to them to deliver our mission, to deliver services. So I think the role of digital in the context of a library is to deliver the most relevant and apposite service that we can or that the public expects us to.
For people who may not know, and this just occurred to me too, can you give us an idea of the scale of the New York Public Library? I mean, how big is it, and where does it rank sort of in world libraries? And this can be by number of patrons, number of branches, number of books circulated, etc.
It's, I mean, it is pretty big. I mean, yeah, I'm sort of, you can sense my Englishness, that I'm kind of reluctant to use kind of superlatives, or it's probably the biggest public library in the world. By quite a large margin. I mean, we probably have about 50 million items. We've got 92 buildings, 88 branch libraries, 4 very large research libraries. I think there are only 4 or 5 libraries on Earth bigger, but they're all national libraries. So the Library of Congress is the biggest library in the history of man. New York Public Library is probably about a third the size of that in terms of its collections, but we're a public library, so you don't have to be a congressman to get into the New York Public Library. We will serve our books to anybody. The British Library is probably bigger by the size of its collection, but again, it's a national library and it's not there to serve the public. So you'd need to get permission, you need a reader's card, you need to be qualified probably by an academic institution to be able to get into the British Library, to use the collections. So the New York Public Library is the biggest library in the world that will let the public in and make our collections freely available to anyone. And we have very significant collections, and we'll share them not only with the public, we would share them with any other library. It's pretty big.
So understanding the size and the scope of the New York Public Library, and your description of what the challenge is, or I should say the role of digital in the library, what's the biggest challenge in implementing what the role of digital is in an institution as large as the New York Public Library?
I think avoiding distractions and staying focused on the things that we have to do, or the things that are the most essential things for us to do right now. Digital technology is full of opportunity, and it's full of... it's a great toolkit. It's a great, almost nothing you can't, nothing you can imagine you can't do. And their resources are quite substantial. And so we can very easily distract ourselves and start doing things that we like to do rather than things that we need to do. The most important things we need to do are to make sure that people, whoever they are, can get to the material that we have to be able to use them in the way they need to use them. Probably in some degree of privacy, so that they're not exposed to prying eyes, I suppose. And I think the challenge is that it's a very large collection, and it's trying to focus on the things that people need most rather than the things that we most want to do ourselves.
Prior to being at the New York Public Library, you were at the BBC. And the BBC is in a different country, as I understand it, than the New York Public Library.
The main office is.
Yeah, the main office is. And you're responsible for a lot of the digital activities at the BBC as well, in the archives there, correct?
Yes.
What was the biggest difference do you see in moving from what essentially is perceived primarily as a broadcaster, which may or may not be true for the BBC anymore, to a library institution like the New York Public Library? What was the biggest transitional change, especially in how digital is conceived in both?
Well, I think... I didn't really watch television very much before I got the job at the BBC. So I was more interested in the role that that new technologies could bring to reimagining the greater potential of the BBC beyond making just programs. The first 8 years, my title was kind of controller of internet, that's probably the closest, just like senior vice president or something.
I was going to say, because anybody can control the internet, that's going to be amazing.
Okay. But BBC, the heads of BBC divisions are called controllers. There's a controller of television and a controller of radio. And so I was controller of that. And I developed, this iPlayer product, which was very successful. And at the end of that, the director general said to me, what do you want to do next? And I said I wanted to go and work in the archives. Because I felt that there was so much value, so much of the narrative of British culture and history had been inadvertently recorded as they were making the programs. Everything from kind of the change in society and the change in the way that we conveyed information, that I wanted to find a way of unlocking that. So I would say that the more important thing for me is the similarity between what I was trying to do at the BBC and the opportunities I get within the library, because I was really trying to make the BBC into a library.
How successful do you think you were?
Pretty successful. I mean, I think the BBC, originally the archives of the BBC were completely locked away and almost impossible for anybody to get to, only programme makers could get to them. Now it's just normal that anything the BBC has produced is considered to be available, you know, will be made available to the public.
And that then, I guess, is a approach that you're taking with the New York Public Library as well, and in collections at libraries, is making them more accessible. That's sort of been a through line, if you will.
Exactly. So I think it's a more of a demand structure. So I think the challenge for us is to create a system. I wouldn't get as far as just in time digitization, but to be able to respond to a researcher or to any member of the public saying, actually, I would like to get a copy of this in a digital format that I can use in this way for these purposes, and for us to be able to respond as quickly as possible to that request. Now, aspects of that are about trying to anticipate it. We know that there are certain things that people want at different seasons and different times. To start building a process by which we can anticipate the kind of material that people will want, but also to always have that ability so that somebody says, I need a thing this week, this month. I need, particularly teachers, asking for specific teaching resources so that we can respond very quickly.
Tony Agee is the Chief Digital Officer of the New York Public Library, and he and I are talking at a Seattle Public Library event in the fall of 2018. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back after a break.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
We're back. I'm talking with Tony Agee. He's the Chief Digital Officer of the New York Public Library. And we had this conversation at a Seattle Public Library event in the fall of 2018.
One thing that always comes with technology, and it's part of the name of this program we're doing here, has to do with privacy. And as there's more technology and things become more digital, things move more freely, including the content. And I realize you and I both share, we both share a dislike of the word content to describe different forms of media. But for the sake of this discussion, you have the content, which moves freely, but then you also have information about those who are accessing or using or manipulating the content. What is the proper role of a library or an institution like a library in dealing with some of those interesting issues of where does the data that can move freely continue to move freely, and when should the library step in and say, no, that's far enough?
I've got to be honest, I don't know. If I come into the library, I imagine that once I'm in the space of the library, I'm protected by the kind of the walls of the library. It's a space I feel I should be able to move around in. Nobody's watching what I do. No one's checking the books I read. Nobody's asking why I'm reading things. Nobody keeps a record of anything I do. And in the old world, when you had a physical book, that would be definitely the case. You'd come in, you could take a book without anybody knowing what you'd looked at in order to find the one or made the selection. You would read the book. You could take it out by handing over your card, and I think the only record, certainly in the UK, would be a date stamp in the inside telling you what date it had to be back, but there'd be no notification that it was me that had taken it. When I bring back the book, they give me back my library card. And we're done. There's no record at all of anything, and what I've done, how I've done it. There's a real concern that in the digital, world, as you start your search, as you log in, we know who you are and what time you've logged in, and we know what you've put into the search engine. We know how many failed searches it took you to find the thing you want. We know what you did when you found the thing you want. We know if you booked it, if you asked to hold it if you took it out. If it's an e-book, we can see if you opened it, we can see if you've read it, we can see where you stopped reading it, we can see when you brought it back. And we can see that about everybody else. We can see who else followed that. We can see aspects of who you've dealt with on the way. And I feel all of these are great vulnerabilities. I think both we and Seattle and every library I know, but certainly this library and New York Public Library, we delete all of those records. We delete them the moment we possibly can. There are many things we don't bother tracking at all. But it does concern me that the machines themselves may not be doing that. The systems that that we rely upon, or third-party organisations that provide some of those services, may not have the same attitude. And not because there's anything wrong with them, but I just think they may not have the same diligence and the same concerns. So that is a concern to us. On the other hand, libraries, particularly archives, rely upon information being made available to the public that some people would prefer the public not to know about. They'd like people not to know that, certain history, their tax records or other correspondence. And so there's a very difficult line for libraries to be able to make available public information that should be in the public domain, while at the same time respecting the rights of an individual to remove information from the public domain.
Is there a process that you've started to establish as to how do you decide whether something should get greater accessibility or where you draw the line?
You mean personally identifiable information?
For example, let's say you get this great collection of documents which might be property records, historically speaking, and they happen to be only available for a long time just as paper. So as a result, if you wanted to get that information, you had to go into the library, you had to, manually go through every page. And there might be, personal information, people who may be alive, who may be deceased, or whatever else like that in there. Suddenly you have the ability to digitize all of that and put it on the web, make it fully available. And so nobody has to go through any hoops to try to look at it. But that said, that means then the content in there, which might be personal information, albeit at one point public information, is suddenly available to anybody who wants to look at it. What kind of thought process would a library or should a library go through before making the decision to make it that broadly available?
So I don't know what other libraries do. We don't publish it at all. The only information that we publish in the way that you're imagining is material that's already in the public domain or material that's out of copyright. And for something to be out of copyright, that means that the last originator or creator must have been dead for 70 years. And so we kind of feel that there's a big enough gap between somebody's personal information in that context and us making the material publicly available on the open web. But we will certainly still give you access to material that's well within side copyright or is still clearly, the originators are still alive if you come onto the premises. So I think the distinction is that which we would publish freely and that which we would give you access to.
What kind of expectation of privacy should an individual have as a library patron? Many of us now have sort of realized that when it comes to Facebook, social media, online systems that are commercially operated, that our expectation of privacy is perhaps not what we... The reality is different than maybe what our expectation had been. Is the expectation of privacy when an individual comes into a library to use online or digital materials different? Should it be different?
I think it should be different. And I think, it would be true to say that it keeps some people in the libraries awake at night. We have a person whose only job is to worry about patron privacy is a privacy officer. That is the only thing that Bill ever worries about, and he worries a lot about it. We have convened many groups of people. We currently have a project right now where... we've asked one of our general counsels, one of our lawyers, to convene an entire study around everything we think about privacy, everybody outside of us thinks about privacy, and what the patrons think about privacy. And that's going to inform the way we start thinking about policies. We are talking to as many people as we can. And every library I've ever been to, or every librarian I've ever spoken to, it seems to be far more concerned about it than I think the public think they are, and in most cases than the public are themselves. And I think it is a real issue because the quality of the services that people have become used to, whether that's Google, Amazon, Facebook, which are all fine services, take for granted that people are reasonably comfortable with the information they gather about them in order to make the services better. And I think libraries are beginning to feel that we are not part of that industry, and that we have to think very differently about it.
How much of the concern about privacy in the library should be on the patron? How much should they be, what questions should they be asking? You know, there's obviously, as wonderful as the New York Public Library is and the Seattle Public Library and other library systems, these aren't the only ones out there. There are probably, you know, many libraries may have different approaches to how they handle this. If I were to be a good informed library patron, are there questions I should be asking of the library?
I don't think there's anything you need to ask that we wouldn't have asked ourselves, and I think we would give you a positive answer. So one of the things that we are doing in New York, which is not just the New York Public Library, but the Brooklyn and Queens systems as well, is a program of education among the librarians in order to make us ready so that when patrons do ask us questions about what they should do or what concerns they should have or how they should deal with privacy issues, that we are informed and we're able to give them the best possible advice we can. So I don't want to overstate it, but you know, we take it very, very seriously. It is something that we think is, front and center of the concerns that we have about the role that a library has when dealing with people in this era.
Are you getting more questions from patrons about privacy these days, especially in the current environment when people are concerned and the term's always thrown out about surveillance state or surveillance technology? Are you getting more concerns from patrons? Because you already mentioned once that maybe patrons aren't as concerned as they should be, or individuals.
Maybe a better way of answering it is we're not getting as many as we would like or expect. We do our best to invite people to talk to us. We put notices around and say, come and ask us. By the way, the mayor of New York has sort of also funded that program. So it's not just the librarians. I think we're right across the entire public sector. I think we are aware that we need to almost stimulate more questions and more challenge. We point out that there are cameras on the computers, and we've got arrows that point to CCTV cameras, and we're telling people all the time, there are times when your behaviours and your privacy is at risk, but we do everything we can not to breach that and to encourage people to understand more and to ask more.
Why do you think it is that people aren't more concerned or aren't asking you more questions?
I think older people don't believe that. I think if you're of a certain age, you can't imagine it, and if you're young, you've sort of grown up and not. You don't feel it's been taken away. And I think, people tend to fall into, those people who are concerned tend to fall into two groups. There are those who they trust their government to have information about them because they believe that the government will keep them safe. They are concerned about the behaviours of other people who are, capable of creating a threat to personal safety. But they don't really like the idea that that business is trying to exploit information about them. But then there's another group of people who are sort of reasonably comfortable that businesses will try and offer them improved services and personalized services, and they don't really mind that kind of predictive nature of their commercial behavior, but they don't trust the government to have that view about them. I think the real problem is that if you're concerned about either side, the reality is that actually somewhere in the system, it merges into one, and that, government surveillance and commercial organizations kind of are all in one big happy bucket of information that's being gathered, often with no real intent at all. It's just a kind of a systematic kind of sweeping up of information all of the time that has no particularly malicious intent, but it just does exist.
So it sounds like the majority of people either are resigned to the fact that the information is being gathered, or they trust that nothing bad will happen if it is being gathered. Would
exactly.
that be the two extremes?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Should they be that trusting of the library?
A library?
Yeah. with information? Because I know you said that, you know, at the New York Public Library and in every, you know, library and library organization you've talked to, this tends to keep people awake at nights, right, is to make sure that stuff that's private remains private. But do you think people are placing their trust in the right places when it comes to the libraries?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't think of anything that any library that I know of has done that would put anybody at risk. There may be things that it will turn out that we should have had more foresight about. I can't imagine what they are now, but it's often the case that something you hadn't thought will be true. But my experience of libraries and the behaviours of the libraries that I've worked in are that we were very much on the side of caution, and we would rather not gather the information in the first place than run the risk of holding it and losing it. And we do have to have information, with one exception. We get rid of it the moment we can. The only one exception is fines information.
If you had to pick something that's born digital, because obviously libraries are not creators of content, or most of them are not, but if you had to pick something that's born digital that you wish a library would have done, do you have any examples in your mind?
I think the great goal for a library is to make available material to the widest number of people in the most kind of equal way we possibly can. So, you know, in my mind, something like, if not Wikipedia, the process that produces Wikipedia, the idea of being able to distribute, create a system that distributes authentication in a way that you'd believe has the greatest chance of being true, that can operate at scale, that can be made available to literally anybody as close to for free as possible. I mean, I think that's a pretty good example of the kind of thing that I wouldn't say a library would do, but it looks very library-shaped.
Library-shaped, in other words, just by the fact that it came up with a process, there's sort of an editing, vetting, there is a citation of sources, and it's kind of self-correcting.
Yeah. And, you know, and intended to be equally available to everybody without any variety that would be caused by, let's say, wealth. So no matter how good your hardware is, you're going to get the same version of Wikipedia. I mean, one of the advantages of an organization like the BBC is that it produces the same news to everybody at exactly the same moment, no matter how expensive your radio or television is. You can't get a better version of it. You can't get it earlier. You can't improve on the service. I think a library-shaped service is one that is like that. We will give exactly the same book to everybody on exactly the same terms with exactly the same conditions. You can't come in and buy a better version of the library. We won't give you, there's no gold-plated service. You can't jump the queue, well, you know, with exceptions, when we know that you need additional help. But we won't advantage anybody. We will just do our best to make sure that nobody is disadvantaged. And so Wikipedia has those kind of characteristics. You know, it is intended to meet everybody where they are on equal terms, and there is no way of getting a better version just because of some other advantage you have.
What has been the most significant digital service a library has provided from your perspective? What is the best thing you've seen?
The best thing?
The best thing.
Apart from the hotspots here in Seattle?
Of course, apart from the hotspots here at the Seattle Public Library.
That would be high on my list.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. We have hotspots in New York as well, but that would be very high on my list. I think our work around e-books, we don't know enough about e-reading, but distributing e-books as they stand, I think, has been an important innovation, and we did that at New York on behalf of a much broader community. We are thinking, how can we ensure that creators are acknowledged and properly rewarded when we create interventions into digitization, particularly when you're looking at works that are out of print but still in copyright. I think some of the things we do in the back-end systems, things you won't see around the discovery layers and the what we call the integrated library system, the kind of sort of central nervous system that drives all of the systems around the back, I think are pretty good. We've produced some very lightweight services. We produced a version, an e-reader that didn't require anything to be downloaded that you could just use on the open web. We produced a nice service for school teachers where we've got multiple copies of books that we know would be of use in the classroom. We created a system that allows teachers to come and look at our system, identify a book that we've got, say, 20 or 30 copies of, and hold all 30 copies, and then we'll bring them to the schools. What else? We've digitized some interesting things. We digitized the green book in itself, not necessarily groundbreaking, but useful for us to keep on, you know, keep reminding ourselves how the past wasn't necessarily something we should always be proud of. We've digitized huge numbers of images of New York and then overlaid those historic pictures of New York and overlaid those with contemporary pictures and invited the public to come in and identify areas or annotate them.
So you basically have crowdsourced identification of images, historic images.
Yeah, and also ask people to place contemporary images over the top. So, you know, we've done some interesting experiments, and we've also tried to build some big pieces of infrastructure. I think what I previously imagined was a weakness, I think, is a strength, which is that libraries have been very reluctant to move too quickly and have allowed the marketplace and allowed other organizations to kind of prove things work before libraries have taken the plunge. And I think that has actually inoculated us against that kind of wasteful or harmful behavior. I also think that librarians are incredibly risk-averse. I think they do care very much about patrons and about the impact their work does, and so we're very unlikely to take a chance when we're dealing with public money and when we're dealing with patrons that we have, and particularly when it comes to life, we have a personal relationship with them. These aren't kind of faceless, you know, abstracted users. These are people that are actually known. They come in, they share the space that we work in. And so I think we have a very different connection and a different sense of responsibility for people that we actually know by name. I think probably there's an aspect of one issue is I think we're not big enough. No one library is big enough to really do something that has the kind of beneficial impacts to the whole sector that would not be the case, I suppose, if it were kind of a different kind of structure. So I think that's one area where we do need to think, how can we be different? How can we find something that's common to us all, that we all need, that the commercial sector won't provide, that we can take responsibility for ourselves? But I think we're, you know, early days, we need to kind of learn to talk to each other in a different way, first of all, and then recognize the areas where we think there's a potential vulnerability.
Is that kind of a collaborative effort that you're talking about more likely to be something that a patron may not see? It might be plumbing. By plumbing, I mean digital plumbing, archiving technology, circulation technology, some cataloging technology, something that works behind the scenes. Is that more likely to be a common interest across libraries?
I think in the first instance, yes, because there's a kind of the other side of that is I think we think we know best. I think we think we know, you know, we know what you need. One of the things that I know that the leadership of this library are very keen to do is to change that and to turn that around and listen, you know, be much better at listening and understanding what people need now, what people think they're going to need in the future, and being able to respond to that. So I think to start with, sure, it will be a piece of plumbing because I can see that there are gaps in the plumbing. But I think the leadership of places like Seattle are more inclined to try and open a conversation with maybe not the older generation, but the next generation of library users to say, okay, what are you expecting? What do you need? How can we help you get to where you need to be? So I imagine that's probably it's probably something we haven't thought of, I think, than something that we have.
So what's the role of paper going forward? What's the role of, you know, traditional printed materials and books? Yeah, I mean, you're chief digital officer. You must think about that.
I'm a big fan of paper. I mean, I've only worked in... I mean, I've I'm nearly 60, and I've only worked in this area for about 15 years. And before that, I spent my entire life working with paper. I think paper is, I think print, books, newspapers are the best communications medium ever invented. I don't think in my lifetime they'll be surpassed. They have so many, it has so many advantages. It has its own power supply. It never, you know, it never wears out. You don't need to bolt anything on to be able to read them. You know, they last, it lasts hundreds of years. It's easy to see if somebody's tampered with it or modified it. It's lightweight, it's portable, generally. It's shareable, you can pass it around. I think books are here to stay. I think they're amazing. I don't think digital technology should try and supplant books. I don't think we should imagine that even that we should replicate them. I think we need to work out what is it that digital can do that is different from print and become specialists in that and not try and compete with what is already a pretty perfect a communications medium.
I believe also books don't try to electrocute you if you drop them in the bathtub while you're reading them, so that's probably another benefit of books.
But isn't the Kindle waterproof?
Well, right, the Paperwhite, the new one is waterproof, so I guess that drawback has been taken away. 20 years from now, I'm not going to ask you to look 50 years in the future because that is, everybody asks that question. So I'm going to ask you 20 years from now, what to you does an ideal library look like? In terms of services, in terms of the relative role of digital, what would you like to see 20 years from now in a library?
I think there are going to be two answers, one which I think is probably more realistic and then one that I really would like. So I think it will look like I think they'll look like what's outside this arena now. I think it will be a place of community. I think it will be a place of variety and diversity. I think there'll be a place where people of all walks of life will come and do whatever it is they want to do and feel that they're allowed to do that and they're comfortable to do that and that they've got support from other humans who want them to do that. What I'd really like to see is that multiplied at such scale that there are libraries or things that act like libraries distributed literally onto every street, maybe even kind of versions of libraries in people's homes. Some aspects of the role of a library that people can be with, have with them all the time. That kind of sense of community and support, that sense of knowing that, you know, whatever it is you need, whether it's an information need or something to support your creativity or your ability to self-actualize, is with you all the time. And I think there are kind of, you know, if we'd have said about the concept of communication devices, I'm trying to think back, if I went back to the 1800s, and we were kind of, you know, we were dealing with letters and we were dealing with telegrams and we were dealing with, what do you call those? Telegrams, letters.
Telegraph.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And somebody had said, what do you think the future of communications technology will be? I would have said the idea that you could carry a communication device with you all the time, that you could be able to connect to your family, you could phone your mother, you could phone your, you know, your hospital or your doctor at any time. The idea that you could literally carry it in your pocket, I think people would have thought that's a bit far-fetched. But I think the kind of the principle of a library or the values of a library to be extended, you know, away from single large buildings into much smaller buildings and something that you can literally carry with you all the time. A library that kind of just that is with you all the time is kind of what I would like. I imagine that we could do that, and that's kind of how I would like to fantasize concept of a library. I still like the idea of communal spaces. I still like the idea that you come together and meet people that you wouldn't otherwise spend time with or sit close to or have any kind of sense of affinity with, because I think that's the biggest thing that builds empathy. And I think the thing we need most right now is to rediscover our own humanity, sense of empathy and a sense of responsibility for everybody else around us. And libraries do that probably more than any other thing.
That's your 20-year forecast, then. Your ideal 20-year forecast.
Forecast, but it is, if you, you know, but, yeah. Sure, right. Let's go with that.
Tony Agee, as the Chief Digital Officer of the New York Public Library, thank you.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Tony Agee is the Chief Digital Officer of the New York Public Library, and he and I spoke at a Seattle Public Library event in the fall of 2018. I'm Frank Catalano, GeekWire contributor. Don't forget to subscribe to the GeekWire podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your shows. Thanks for listening to GeekWire.